Hello, first of all, my name is Penny Nindorf, and you'll see me under the FlexEd team in your list of people. If you are new to WIMBA, welcome. Congratulations for getting on. And also, I'd like to thank you all for coming today. I met Stephen Downes last year at a conference in Hawaii where he presented for Ed Media as one of their keynote speakers, and he did a wonderful job. And so I'd really like to welcome Stephen, especially today, since I had a bit of a problem with my days and international days, for coming and presenting today. So I'll hand over to Stephen now.
Oops, that's video. Okay, hang on. Sorry about that, just taking a few seconds to get going. I take it you're hearing me okay, and if the video gods are with us, you will also be getting some video shortly. The video takes a little bit to warm up or something, so we'll see what happens. Eventually you may see me. I'm presenting from my living room. It's just a few minutes after 9 p.m. here in beautiful but snowy Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. Probably a temperature difference between here and there of 60 degrees or so, give or take. Just to put things in perspective, you're recording, that's excellent. Snow, yes, snow. the talk today is kind of a 30,000 foot high level trends sort of talk, as suggested by the title, Trends in Personal Learning. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I mean by personal learning. I'm going to talk about some of the trends in the technologies and how they are beginning to impact learning online. And then we'll wrap up near the end with a re-examination of where personal learning is going with respect to these trends. I want to keep it pretty informal. There's lots of people online, which is always nice to see. 40 people, that's considerably more than I expected, but it's great. And I guess it's even more than that because we're broadcasting into some classrooms as well. I want you to feel free to interrupt and ask questions. We've got it set up here so that I can be interrupted in mid-sentence. So if you raise your hand or somehow signal for attention, I'll stop at that point and you can put in your comment. The discussion is good. I could just do an audio recording and you could all listen to it if we weren't discussing. In fact, I am recording this on audio, so people who are listening later will actually be experiencing it that way. But the if we are able to have a bit of a conversation while we're here as well, that's what makes this live event that much more interesting and more worthwhile. So I hope that works for all of you. I see people are voting with their feet and entering the room. I like that. It's so much better than people voting with their feet and exiting the room. It always happens a little bit too. I've learned to live with it. So, trends in personal learning, and I think where I would like to begin is with the concept of personal learning itself. And I'm just going to do it very high level at this point in time. Why is that video camera not showing? It bugs me. It should show. No video. No video. Sorry, there's a person who was not me. but I don't know why I'm not broadcasting video. Or at least I'm not seeing myself. There we go. I see myself now. Okay, now I'm happy. Maybe none of you can see me, but I can see me. And my little video icons are all up and running. So eventually you'll see some video here. All right, let me talk a wee bit about personal learning. Those little arrows don't work, do they? I thought those arrows worked. Okay, I'll do it. Always see what I have to do. Sorry, I'm fidgeting with the mouse. you silly thing. All right, you have to click go. Sorry. There we go. I'm used to using different systems, and so it's just the little thing, right? You have to click go. The other one, you don't have to click go. It's the little usability differences which throw you off. Personal learning is a concept that I prefer to use instead of self-learning, self-study on the one hand, and social learning or collaborative learning on the other hand. I'm trying to identify a middle point here, and I've identified that middle point in various ways. A number of the people who are in the room will recognize some of these ways, I'm sure. I've talked in the past about groups and networks. You know, really, personal learning, network learning, is the middle of a continuum that begins with learning as an autonomous, single, solitary individual, and on the other end is learning as a member of a group or a class or a cohort of some sort. And in the middle is something that isn't as tightly bound as a cohort, but isn't as loosely bound as the individual, and that is the network, or that is the person in personal learning. The person maintains their autonomy, but they are not completely independent of the rest of the world. I'm getting a request to turn down the volume a bit, so I'll do that. And that should probably be a bit easier on your ears. I have no idea why the video isn't working. It's working on my end. So I am sending, I assume, but I don't know what else to do. Oops, come back. Sorry. I click on the video camera and I expect something to happen, but the only thing that happens when I click on the video camera is that it shuts off the video, which is exactly the opposite of what should happen. Anyhow, there's another way of drawing this continuum, and that's between the modes of study. On the one hand, we have self-study, and some of you may know about the programmed texts or other self-study manuals, that sort of method, all the way through to collaboration, working and learning as a team. But in the middle there, again, is a middle point that is not collaboration, but is not self-study. It's what can be called cooperation. For those of you who are there, I know there's no video. I have no idea what to do about it. According to this system, I should be sending. Let me click options. There's a thought. Okay, video inputs. Logitech cam, yes. Video bandwidth. Maybe if I boost the video bandwidth, that might help. Okay, so I've cranked the video bandwidth to the top of the list, and I have a correctly selected video camera. That's all I can do on my end. Joythy is saying, is there an option to stream? This is the streaming option. Okay. Try one, clicking the video on, and then click the I button. What I button? There's an I button? Where's there an I button? Looking for the I button. I don't see an I button. Interesting. The funny thing about this, of course, is that when we tested this yesterday, it worked perfectly, and we had video. And I'm seeing video. I assume it's Penny, but I an eye. full screen? I see no such thing. Okay. Okay. I've enlarged Wimba to full screen. I'm still... I'm really puzzled here. Okay, I've got the little icon that shows what my bandwidth is, the talk, the little speaker icon, the little things that go up and down, the little voice icon, the little camera, and then a telephone. And that's what I've got. Oh my goodness. I found it. Okay. I see the problem. It was a closed eye and it just didn't click. Oh, okay. My goodness. Okay, well, live and learn. That was interesting. All right, so now you can see me, you can hear me, you got more of me than you could ever possibly want, I'm sure. All right, so what have I done? I've established a location for personal learning as a midway point between individual learning and group learning, a midway point between self-study and collaboration. Oh yeah, well, you should be seeing me really well. I've cranked the bandwidth for video up as high as it goes. So let me center myself a bit to the camera here. Oh, right, okay, there's a good lag of a couple of seconds in the video, too. Never mind, Stephen. Okay, so... Now, just to set the map a little bit, I also want to talk about some overall trends, and these overall trends are all going to be characteristic of the different technologies and the different approaches that I talk about. And really, I want to identify four major trends, and again, these are trends that you're all going to be familiar with in one way or another. The first of these is simplicity. Not in evidence today, but you know, all of this stuff will get easier and easier as time goes by. The second element is invisibility. Right now we have to play with all kinds of switches and doohickeys and doodads and wires and stuff. Eventually all of this stuff fades into the background, and I like to use the analogy of the electric motor. Or motors in general. You know, when the motor was first invented, what you would do is you'd buy a motor and you'd plug it into things, and that's what would make things work. So you would plug your motor into a generator, you would plug your motor into a meat grinder, or you'd plug it into a fan, whatever. And so, anytime you wanted to use something electrical, you had to fiddle with your motor, you had to fiddle with your appliance, and all of that sort of thing. But eventually, the electric motor just sort of went into the background, and now we don't need to think about motors at all. Motors are just everywhere. They're inside DVD players. I'm looking around the room. They're inside clocks. They're inside computers. They're inside cars. They're everywhere. We don't need to worry about how to run a motor. We just worry about the specific appliance that we're talking about. Another trend is ubiquity. This is ambient technology, ambient internet. This is, again, right now, if we want to use the computer, we go to the computer. That's becoming less and less the case, where technology is more ambient, where people have their mobile phones, where people have their home computer, their work computer, where people have computers in their cars, or computers tracking their footsteps as they go out jogging. Eventually, as time goes by, ambient computing, ambient internet access really changes the way we think of these things. I've used the analogy in the past of writing. It used to be we had to go to a special room to read. We called it the reading room. But now today we have writing anywhere we want it, and we can create writing anywhere we want it, and writing has become ambient. the final trend, which I think is really important and probably the one that underlies this presentation, is personalization. Technology more and more is becoming yours. And by yours, what I mean is that more and more your technology infrastructure is being tailored to fit your personality, your lifestyle. We've gone from the days when everybody would get a single tan white computer and it would sit on the desk to a wide variety of different computers. You know, we'll talk about the iPad a little bit later, but the thing about the iPad is that it fits a niche market of people who want to use their computers in a certain way. Where they don't want a small one, they don't want a big one, they want something just kind of in the middle. And it's this kind of in the middle thing that speaks to this personalization. Are funny things happening to my slides? Who's messing with my slides? okay. Now. Okay. Come back, slide, come back. There we go. Okay. I want to talk ever so briefly about education. Now, everybody here is a teacher or involved in education in some way, so I'm not really going to be saying anything you don't know, but what I do want to do is to kind of frame the discussion by thinking of education and learning in a particular way. Education in this presentation and generally is a social phenomenon, and it is fundamentally a process of communication. Now, I construe communication very widely. Communication is not simply talking back and forth, but communication is the full spectrum of possible ways of engaging and interacting with other people. So any sort of activity really is a form of communication. A hockey game is communication of a certain sort. A football game, sending letters, acting out in a play, writing a poem, creating a painting. All of these are forms of communication. And education itself is a process of communication. We'll come back and talk about that a little bit later on. I want to distinguish that from learning. Learning is fundamentally a process of growth. And I draw that distinction because, people say, I say, education is fundamentally a process of communication. Then the very next thing people say is, aha, education is inherently social. You have to have other people. And that's not the case. And it's not the case for two reasons. The first reason is that you can communicate with non-humans. I communicate with my cat all the time. I commune with nature. Communication can be construed very widely. But secondly, it's not the communication, it's not the social nature that is inherent to learning. Learning is a process of growth. It's a process of the creation of new neural structures, new neural networks in our brain. So to learn is distinct from to educate. And you know this, you all know this, but it's funny how these two things get conflated so much. Given that, though, over the years, educators have tended to focus on the communication side. And what's important in education is not simply the content of communication, but the actual act of communication, or as Terry Anderson would say, the presence, the idea that you are projecting yourself into a community and members of that community are projecting themselves to you. To learn a discipline is to communicate with people in the discipline, but more it is to actually immerse oneself in the discipline, to become like other members in the discipline, to grow a mental state, a neural state, through a process of immersion and interaction with that discipline. Now, again, this isn't a talk about the nature of education and the nature of learning. So I'm mainly just trying to set that up as a frame, and we can come back to that if we need to. Again, do feel free to interrupt and ask questions or make comments at any time. I welcome that. And I'm going to pause for a second or two, forward the slide, take a sip of coffee. Decaf, because it's evening here. And given the picture of education that I've talked about, really we come down to a set of basic tools. And the tools are pretty much the same as prehistory, which is why I give you the picture of the old style chalkboard. The tools really are staples. You have books and other reading implements, or maybe I should say content consumption implements, ways of receiving input, communication, content from other people. We have notepads or exercise books or writing pads or other writing implements or other things on which we record our thoughts, or drawing pads, creation pads, things that we use to create as we learn. We have blackboards or blackboard. Okay, that was really lame. I'm sorry. Or other demonstration tools. Tools, again, that we use to project ourselves to communicate. These tools are used in an environment, a communication environment, an environment like a classroom, an environment like an online classroom, an environment like the one we're in. And so in education, in addition to the learner, typically you have other learners, or you have a facilitation or a teacher of some sort, the experts in the discipline, the people whose model you will be following, whose practice you will be attempting to emulate. These are the staples of education. These are the tools we have used in education, again, like I say, from prehistory, and we use them because they're pretty basic. They're pretty basic because they represent how we communicate, how we learn, how we receive content, how we project content. Okay. Let's take that basic frame and now bring it forward into the 21st century that we now inhabit. And I've had a really good run over the last week or so because, of course, Apple released a product, interestingly, to a great deal of laughter, which I confess I didn't expect, called the iPad. And I won't get into the reasons for the laughter. You can look it up yourself. But I've had a good run because back in 1998, I predicted the arrival of a device called the Pad, standing for personal access device. And we had a bunch of predecessors to the iPad. We had tablet computing, we had the One Laptop Per Child initiative, we've had netbooks, we have the BlackBerry, the iPod Shuffle, and all of that. And now finally we have the Pad itself. The idea of the Pad is that it's portable, it's personal, it's connected, it's multimedia, and eventually it'll be something that we can control ourselves. It's interesting to see the criticisms of the iPad that have come out in the last week or so. The big criticisms are that it's a controlled environment. It doesn't support Flash. It doesn't support any application that Apple doesn't approve of. And the other criticism is that it's a consumptive environment. We are expected to be passive receivers of content. There are no content creation tools in the iPad. There's no camera, for example. There is a keyboard, but it's a little bit weird. So, you know, there's those sorts of concerns. But, you know, I think that these are things that will find their way into, if not this particular product, into products similar to this in the future. We're seeing, do you want to shut down your video to save bandwidth? Do I need to save bandwidth? I don't want to shut down video if I don't have to. I don't feel like I have bad bandwidth, but anyhow. Max is saying you can't copy and paste. Right, that's true, exactly, that sort of thing. So I think we're learning as much about the nature of the pad that's going to be arriving in the future by the sorts of criticisms that we're seeing of the pad as it exists in the present. But I'm happy for now. The pad exists in the present, and I think we really have entered into something new here, because we have something that's highly portable, that can be used to take notes, to do things in a learning way. Could you write down the link of the web map first chart? Oh well, the link is on the slide, is it not? Certainly. Oh, I see. I get it. You want the link posted. Okay, hang on, because I have to come back to it. Oh darn. That is a cool map. I have to go back into PowerPoint, go into normal view, go to the map, click a few times because it never clicks the way you want it to. Okay. I'm just trying to be a little of everything, but I've done it. Okay. And now we put this back into... It's just because I have PowerPoint running alongside just so that I have my notes and all of that, but then it starts acting weird. There we go. Go back to where I was. Okay. So what we have in the iPad really is a great content accessing tool. But, you know, I mean, learning is going to be about much more than content. As Mark McGuire is saying here, and I'll quote him because he's exactly right, the iPad encourages individual consumption at the expense of sharing and community. Perhaps demand for social communication tools will result in new, better devices down the road. Well, and the only thing, Mark, I would say is they don't have to be social. Again, they can be individual and cooperative. But that aside, you're absolutely right. The next major element that we are seeing as a trend in technology, if not in the pad, certainly in the environment generally, is a whole wealth of tools for creativity. And these tools, they vary from input tools, cameras, video recorders, camera phones, screen cams, the whole range of stuff. You look at the environment that I'm working in right now. I've got the video camera. Hello, I've got my microphone. I got my other camera. So here I could take a picture of all of you. No, wait. Why isn't that going to work? Anyhow, I've just taken a picture of you. There's a little delay on the video, but I thought that was pretty fun, etc. But also, not just capture tools, but the editing tools, Audacity, Premiere Elements. These have now, Audacity, of course, is free. Premiere Elements is very cheap. We have now a wide range of editing tools that used to be incredibly expensive and usable only by professionals. 5-10 years ago even, you wouldn't really have thought of doing things like desktop video editing for the most part. But now kids are creating their own green screen effects, with Apple's photo booth, of all things, which is, just there for free. And even if you don't have your own computer that can do these things, there are more and more online editing services, Picnic for video editing, Gliffy for creating flowcharts, and many others, hundreds of others, and I'm not going to run through the whole list of them. Some of them are full content suites like Google, the Google Docs applications, or Zoho. Some of them are single purpose like the Lolcats. ICANN has cheeseburger.com with a Z. You upload a photo, somebody else puts a caption on it. That's the application. It's brilliant. I love it. Perhaps the opportunities, says Mark, lie in the assemblies of tools that are by themselves constraining. That's exactly right. And we can assemble these things and interact with these things, moving data and content back and forth. We can do it physically in our own homes, or we can do it online through the use of APIs, mashups, and the like. Yahoo Pipes is a good example of a system that allows you to gather information from multiple sources and output it into new sources. And if you look at the work that Tony Hurst has done with Pipes, it's like he's a miracle worker. But again, this is early days for that sort of technology, and we're working with pipes as though they were pipes. But, eventually this is the sort of thing that becomes very intuitive, drag and drop, move your hands around the screen, and you're bringing in content from different places and creating something new out of it. As well, we are getting new and very interesting ways of creating content. Things like gesture-based devices, the motion tracking devices that they're using in the creation of films now will eventually be part of everyday home use. And we're beginning to see the first stages of that with products like the Nintendo Wii. You can create things, a tennis game or whatever, by moving your hand. Other factors, things like geolocation, sensor networks, all of these are bringing new types of content and new ways of creativity. Focus people, just like on NCIS. I've seen a few episodes of NCIS, but it's not really my show. Anyhow, besides that. That's a huge trend, I think, in the future of learning, is creativity and the use of tools to create new kinds of content. Now, of course, there's more than just the creation of content. There's then what you do with that content. And I think as important as creativity is presence or presentation tools. And there's a wide range of things that I could talk about here. And I'm talking not just about systems like this, although I think a conferencing system like Wimba that we're using here, or Illuminate, or Centra, and there are various other ones, I think are very important. I use my work at the National Research Council, we have a system called the Cisco MCU. I think it stands for Multiple Conferencing Unit. And this is a wonderful little toy because it connects desktop video conferencing with H.323 video conferencing. Those are your big video conference. I want to say Tandberg, but that's audio conferencing. It's the other one. Anyhow, the television-based video conferencing unit. But not just that, you can telephone into the system, or as well, you can Skype into the system. So what we have with the MCU is really a conferencing unit that doesn't care what kind of input device you have, whether it's computer, whether it's a video conferencing unit, whether it's a telephone, whether it's whatever. We're getting more and more sophisticated tools as well for the presentation into these tools. I haven't really done a whole lot here with this presentation, although in theory maybe I could. But right now I'm projecting audio, I'm projecting a video feed, and I'm projecting fairly static slides. And as time goes by, I will be able to create and project more and more multimedia presentations. And our interactions between ourselves can become more and more multimedia. Mark is asking whether we're constrained by metaphors like desktop, email, blackboard that have outlived their usefulness. You know, I mean, it's easy to say we're constrained by the metaphors. On the other hand, the metaphors exist for a reason, and the reason is that they correspond to human communicative capacities, you know, sight and sound, gestures, that sort of thing. So it's not clear that they've necessarily outlived their usefulness. Nonetheless, there is still the opportunity to take presentation to another level. You know, I am, for example, right now static, stuck here where I am. If I put on, though, one of those 360-degree cameras that CNN used in Haiti not too long ago, and I strapped that to my back, and I had my ambient wireless, and of course my computer pack and my audio, then I could go wandering through the forest and talk about trees and frogs and toadstools and all those sorts of things, and you could follow along, and you wouldn't have to just watch what I'm pointing. You can control the video and manipulate the video so you can look ahead of me, behind me, to either side. So we can get well beyond that sort of presentation. And if we took that presentation technology one step further, and I'm walking through the forest with my video unit, my 360 video unit, only it's in 3D, you put on your glasses that you picked up because you just saw Avatar, which it's in its 545th week in the theaters, and now you can see my forest experience in 3D, and it can become very immersive. Or you take the 360 camera that I have, and instead of manipulating that presentation with your mouse the way you do with the Haiti 360 degree video, instead you enter into a little room where all of the video elements are projected on the wall. Now you're sitting there in this little room with your 3D glasses, completely surrounded by 3D video, which is the forest in which I am standing. So we can go far beyond the ordinary presentation capacities. I saw a reference just a few days ago, maybe a week or so ago, to USB synth sticks. And what they are is, you know, the peel and sniff sort of thing that they used to have in magazines. Well, similar sort of technology is embedded into a USB drive, so that when a certain signal is sent, your USB drive sends off a little puff of scent. Now, of course, you know, it's going to run out, but the ink in your printer runs out as well. So, you know, this sort of thing can potentially work. And so you can get an aroma aspect to your online experience. Now, would this help learning? I have no idea, but I'm sure there's a PhD thesis in it. I can't emphasize enough how much this sort of presence, conferencing, and interaction has exploded in even just the last year. I've been working and doing presentations both online and offline for, well, 10, 15 years now. And I've done more in the last year probably than in all other years combined. And it's not because I suddenly became able to use these things. It's because suddenly everybody's using them. It turns out this is a lot cheaper than flying me to Australia, for one thing. So I think that's a factor as well. We've now reached a point where the bandwidth is good enough, the quality is good enough, that we can actually have a decent kind of interaction here. Now I see we've got a Twitter tag being advertised. Why people would be Twittering instead of commenting in the comment window, I don't know. Mark McGuire says, and this is a good comment, and it's totally beside the point, but I'm still going to read it anyways because I like it. Oops, and now it's scrolling. Don't do that. Avatar is a good example of the triumph of visual spectacle over narrative or content. Should we be worried that the tools and technology will become the content? How will we be changed through the use of these new tools? I mean, first of all, I'm going to channel McLuhan, right? The tools have always been the content. I mean, we were limited in what we could do, what we could say, what we could think through the use of text. You know, if you think about how much the use of text has constrained us and shaped our thought. I had a little interaction just yesterday where we're talking about, you know, how are we going to set up elements and entities in a database, and people wanted to create the categories as the basic elements. And, you know, it's one of these little ontological things where the descriptive term used in language has become the basic entity rather than the thing itself in the world. I thought to speak to Avatar specifically, I think that because the technology was so new, because they're throwing so much at us with the 3D and all of that in Avatar, what they did is they played it very safe with the story. The story is a very familiar story. It doesn't surprise anyone. We all know where it's going. You know, it's kind of like the retelling of a communal myth, you know, the retelling of a favorite story. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. There's, you know, in communication, there is content, but there is also ritual. And I think in the case of Avatar, the story, properly so-called, was an act of ritual. It was us retelling the same sort of story we might have retold, you know, around a campfire 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, whenever they first came up with campfires, I guess it'd be earlier than that. It's the same sort of thing, you know, the new way versus the old way, the artificial versus the natural. Except the Cowboys didn't win. Funny. Anyhow, but it is, and that's how I interpret that. I would expect that this immersive 3D technology is going to be used to tell more and more interesting stories. But I'll tell you what really struck me about Avatar, and what it was, and other people have commented on this too, I've seen this in some of the reviews, is you were completely drawn in. It was very immersive. And that was interesting because now we are beginning to see, at least here in North America, the first inklings of 3D TV. And this is a bit of a concern to me because up till now, you know, between the time when the internet was invented until now, we've been able to do both TV and internet at the same time. And in fact, even as I present here, there's a TV in the room that's on. There's no sound, of course, but it's on. Right now there's a Cold FX commercial on, which you don't need to know that. With 3D TV, we can't do that. We can't be immersed in the TV and online at the same time unless the online experience is part of the immersion. So, in a sense, it's taking away from the multitasking that we've become used to. And it's really focusing our attention. So I think that we're going to see this more and more very rapidly in living rooms. A 3D experience that draws you in and doesn't let you get up and do other things because it's so immersive and so compelling. There's a danger in that. I mean, television is compelling enough as it is. There's a danger of it, being too compelling, too immersive, and turning us, I don't want to say turning us, that's not what I mean, but lulling us into being too passive. I love that Jen's in a training session while listening to this. That just kills me. I could go on. There's all kinds of ways for people to project themselves now. Streaming, Ustream, Skype. And, I think we are at just the beginning stages of this. This is going to explode. These conferences that we are having now, and as I say, there have been so many in the last year, I think it's the leading edge of something that is really, really huge. Once we get organized, once we don't have to plan ahead and all of that, once we can just do these things quickly, spontaneously, jump into one of these immersive, interactive experiences as though we were turning on a television channel and having a conversation like this, I think that is going to attract many, many, many more participants. And I'm enjoying the discussion in the chat room. Too much multitasking now. Could immersion give our brains a bit of a break? Maybe, but at what cost? Because we surrender so much of our self-control. 3D disrupts spatial awareness, makes driving dangerous. That's why they give it. Video game industry has never adopted it in the form of goggles. That's interesting. I'll have to look that up. Clint, if you have a reference for that, that would be very interesting to see. Anyhow, moving on, because although I thought at the beginning I didn't have enough content, as it always turns out, I have too much content. The next one, because I've really talked about it a lot over the years, is community and network, and we're sort of progressing here. We've gone from the individual presence on the internet with our own personal iPad. We've gone to creativity and creating things. We've gone to presentation, and now the next step beyond that is the creation of community and network. And this harkens back to the concepts that I talked about at the beginning of the talk, the midway point between individual and group. And if you look at the diagram that's on the screen, you can kind of get the distinction between a community, or sorry, the distinction between a network and a group. A network is more complex. A network, in a group, everybody's a member of the group, and maybe you have a leader, and maybe you have people filling roles. But in a network, you have clusters within the network, you have hubs within the network, you have people who are maybe in the network or not in the network, we don't really know. There's a core, there's a periphery, there's a very loose and porous boundary. There are all kinds of substructures in the network. So we get a different picture of collections of people, and we saw this instantiated really well, I think, over the last couple of years in the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge course that George Siemens and I ran online. Because our course, that's my clock. My clock is 10 minutes early, and it's telling me that it's 10 o'clock, except really it's 10 to 10. Anyhow, we'll just wait for it to finish. Happily, we don't have to wait for it to dong 10 times. Anyhow, the structure of the course was not a cohort of people all doing the same thing at the same time. And rather, what happened was everybody was connected around, you know, this structure and this set of content and this set of interactions. But people read different things. People talked to different people. People took part in different activities. There were core members. There were peripheral members. There were clusters. There were hubs. There were people, I'm sure, who were just looking along and lurking. And that was a really comfortable environment because it didn't force a certain mode of participation. People were able to choose their own mode of participation. It also allowed for many, many more people to participate because we didn't worry about managing the participation. People managed themselves. And it created a different kind of learning because, again, there was no single core curriculum that everyone learned. Each person in the course learned, keeping in mind what we mean by learned, something different. Their experiences were all different, and consequently, their learning was different. And the interesting thing, from my perspective, was because everybody had a different perspective, a different learning, when they came together in this community and interacted, we got something quite different. We didn't get just regurgitations of the same content. We actually got new content, new ideas, new expressions of the ideas coming out because people had different perspectives and they were creating intersections of ideas and content in different ways. Mark McGuire is saying, because networks have no specific objectives, they don't experience goal displacement, unlike organizations and institutions, but I suspect we need groups and networks to maintain a sense of difference, balance, and unpredictability. That's an interesting comment. You know, I think there's always going to be this argument for groups, and I'm not going to get into the groups versus networks arguments here. I'm not going to get into the groups versus networks argument here. Although I'm so tempted to, but I don't really want to. So I'll say, good point. There's a lot that could be discussed along those lines. How's that for a response? Everybody else in the room is saying, Steve, what a great amount of restraint you've shown today. Okay. So, moving even beyond network, and I've talked about this a little bit already, is immersion and virtual reality. I do some work with military training here in New Brunswick, and some of the immersion systems that they have are, well, just ridiculous. I mean, I flew in a helicopter simulator, and the crash really felt like a crash. I just wish it hadn't been so quick. Don't say no slide. There is a slide. Please say you see the slide. Well, it'll come eventually. But what I mean by immersion and virtual reality is... I'm trying again with this slide. There we go. Is there now. Good. Thank you. Wimba is so finicky. Anyhow, I include by this not just simulations, but also games, you know, EVE Online, World of Warcraft, all those other games. But not just those sorts of things. Applications. Things like... Microsoft Word or an AutoCAD type of application or a spreadsheet program or an application that manages a nuclear reactor. All of these are types of immersion or virtual reality in the sense that there's an environment in which you are working which is a real environment or a representation of a real environment, and you can have interactions and perform activities, dashboards. I saw a simulation, full-scale simulation of a battleship command console. You know, and you're there, and it's you're in an office. It's not that immersive, but you look in front of you, and it looks like you're running a battleship. Now, again, we want to merge these with the preceding ideas, right? We want to merge these with the idea that there is a personal space in these things so that you can access to these things. You can access these things through your personal access device. The idea here that you can create things, and this is what was so attractive about Second Life. You could go in and you could create things in Second Life. You couldn't really do anything after you did that, but you could create things. You know, again, me talking with these military guys in their simulations, they want people to be able to go into these simulations, create things, and interact with each other, to have this network of communication so that you're there in the simulation and you're in your tank or whatever, and you have your tank crew, because, you know, it's a very collaborative, cooperative thing, and out there in the world, around the world, other people are also in this same simulation in their own tanks. Now, I'm not really a big military person, but you can sort of see how that would be attractive to the military people. But you can imagine the same sort of approach being used for all kinds of other sorts of simulations. Might the ideal... another first-rate comment coming in from Mark, and it keeps scrolling. Might the ideal immersive learning environment... encourage a very self-centered, solipsistic worldview. It could, if there were no people in it, but this is just it. These immersive environments are going to be worlds in which you create. They're going to be worlds in which you project, in which there is presence, in which you interact, in which the things you do affect other people. And so... they could, if they were, you know, just content dumps like movies, but I think they're going to be much more interesting. Somebody said RSS feeds a bit earlier. Imagine feeds similar to RSS feeds bringing in the results of content feeds or sensor networks or statistical data and feeding that into these immersive virtual reality environments and creating effects in these. And somebody says augmentation of services is the next big step, I think. Absolutely. And not just that, augmentation of reality itself. And again, we're already seeing a number of augmented reality applications. Two major types of augmented reality applications now. One where you put on goggles and then you see what resembles a heads-up display. If you look at the augmented reality in the picture here, you see the parts of an engine instead of just being a mess of bits of metal and tubes and things, which is what an engine looks like to me. All the parts are neatly labeled, and you can even get instructions on what to do. Or you can use... an iPhone or some other mobile device, and with the camera recognizes the scene that's in front of you, whether it be a building, a sign, or whatever. They're also using the QR codes to stimulate that, and then the phone displays signals, cues, messages, notes that have been left by other people, links to photographs, advertisements, historical facts, whatever, in front of you about the scene that you're looking at with your iPhone. You know, again, think ahead. These things aren't just going to be devices that you carry. There will eventually, probably in our lifetimes, although maybe not in our budget, contact lenses that you put in that are wirelessly enabled and will project onto your eyeball, or you know, into your field of vision, information about what you're looking at. So reality will look like one of those cable news network shows, like the Terminator, exactly. Except we don't have to become a fluidic robot to do it. So that's kind of the technical environment. We're just kind of running down toward the end of the talk here, but I want to talk briefly about how this is going to take us toward personal learning. You know, right now, our idea of learning is, you know, with a class of people working together as a cohort, all working on the same topic or the same content area. And you begin to see that with these really, really complex and rich and personalized environments, the idea of the class doesn't even make sense anymore. Yes, there are other people, but there's no sense in which everybody is doing the same thing all the time. Yes, there may be groups or collections of some sort from time to time, but you know, these come together and disappear on an as-needed basis, on an almost day-to-day basis. You know, there are factors that emotional factors holding us to the idea of the class, you know, the fear, it's expressed even in this presentation, that without it we'll somehow atomize. But I think that we'll find that in this rich communicative environment, the need to form this little group that does everything together will become less and less, and we'll be forming more and more ad hoc groups. And already we're seeing that in Facebook and other similar applications where, yes, there are groups, but they might have a lifespan of like 20 minutes. Learning is going to be organized very differently in such an environment. We'll shift from the class to the topic of learning, and indeed from the topic of learning to whatever task it is that we're attempting to do outside learning, whether it be to run a nuclear battle, nuclear whatever, to flying an airplane, to doing an operation, to driving a car, to making biscuits. The task will center the learning that we're doing, and the learning will present itself in an environment appropriate to that task. Mark is saying just-in-time learning, but not just-in-time, just-in-place as well, and just as you need it, and personalized to your previous learning, your level of learning, and your personal taste. If you're making biscuits and the biscuit recipe pops up and you have an allergy, it will give you, you know, the no-lactose or the no-peanut version of the biscuit recipe. Because I want to learning, well, that's the hope, right? Yeah, in learning right now, motivation is the big thing. And, you know, I've always said, you know, the reason you have to motivate people is because you're trying to get them to do something that they don't really want to do. But if they really want to do it, then motivation becomes much less of a factor. Learning itself will become more project-focused. Accreditation, recognition of learning is going to be based much less on the completion of formal programs and degrees and much more on the achievement of credentials and competencies. There won't be a particular core of these competencies that everybody needs to obtain, but rather each person will have their own personal set of credentials or competencies, much like badges or whatever. And the selection of these learning activities, the use of these competencies won't be standalone, and there won't be an entirely separate educational establishment, but will be more or less integrated into the rest. Mark is saying, will informal personal learning creep into formal accredited learning? Inevitably, because if it doesn't, it will replace it. And there's a very large power structure that will not want to see it replaced. And that's where this is going to go. If you look at learning activities and the management of learning activities, right now, what we have are essentially content delivery systems, along with a little communication and some marking and gradebook functions. They're institutionally based. They tend to focus on delivery to classes and the like. But in the future, we're going to have to have what might be called topic or content delivery systems, more like a game module or more like a module in WordPress or Drupal or Facebook that deliver learning activities into other environments, into creations, into presentations, into networks, into simulations, into environments. Ultimately, we have the idea of a personal learning environment that is an individual's way of accessing these learning activities, and the personal learning environment will incorporate these features. It will allow somebody to access content, to create content, to connect with a network, and to plug into these simulations, environments, or other learning activities. So from an institutional perspective, a management perspective, if you will, resources will be offered. Oops, having slide issues again. I don't know who did that. They shall be punished. Just kidding. Basically, an educational institution will offer a library of these activities or resources. Everything from standalone content like books to presentations, recorded presentations, live presentations, interactivities, entry points into simulations, and the like. And they will be available in various environments. They will be able to learn about the student. They will be able to get information not just locally but from anywhere on the internet. And they will communicate and allow the communication with other learners and other systems and services. So really what we're going to have here is, from a personal perspective, a very immersive system, maybe one that sucks us right in, like Avatar did, but a system that is connected to other people and to a variety of resources. And from a system perspective, from the perspective of institutions and teachers and the like, what we have is an infrastructure that provides inputs into these systems. So you're delivering learning not to an individual person, but delivering learning into an environment in which there may be individual people. That's basically the scope of what I wanted to talk about today. As always, it would be nice to go into more detail on any one of these topics. Of course, could be a full presentation on its own, but we're going to wrap it up here and see if there are any comments or any questions, and I'll type the link to the slides into the window so that you can see it again. And now I have to turn off my mic, so I have to turn off the lock talk. Oops. And just waiting for somebody to speak.
Well, I'd like to thank Stephen Downs very much for that presentation today. You did a wonderful job. I hope everybody else has enjoyed it as much as I have. If there's no questions or comments, we'll thank Stephen and see how we go. But we do have a few more minutes if anybody wants to ask any questions. If everybody would like to show Stephen how much they appreciated the talk, if you'd like to go to your smiley face located down the bottom, press your down arrow and clap your hands, that'd be great.
I wore everyone down.
TJ Burke was on the montage.
Cool.
There is a few questions. Hand over to Margaret, who got the first one.
Okay.
Now, how about Gail? Marg didn't mean to put her hand up. She was clapping.
Oops.
Sorry, Penny. I was clapping as well.
No worries, Gail.
Now, when I put that link in, did I send it to a specific person as well? I don't know. Yes, I did, didn't I? Oh, darn.
Helen, would you like to have a chat or ask a question?
Okay, I've put the link to the slides into the chat room, and you should be able to simply click on the link and get the slides. They're about 5.5 megabytes, so it may take a little bit to get them.
Helen's just lost her audio and network connection, but she did have a question for you. She's just going to come over here and ask it.
Okay. Meanwhile, while she's walking over there, I'll tell Tom in Canberra that almost all of this will be built with affordable technology. Broadband and the equivalent of iPads will become like household, very much so. It's not going to distribute unevenly, but it will become worldwide much more rapidly than electricity did. I assume she's still walking over. I didn't realize I had that much time.
No, she went back again because somebody else was asking a question. So I think she's given up now. She's still trying to sort out her audio.
Yeah, what I've learned about Wimba is if you somehow unplug your speakers or your mic while Wimba is on, you actually have to close Wimba and start it again because once it's gone, it's gone. At least that's how it works on my system. Marge, I don't see a global push for anything, honestly.
There's a question there for you, Stephen, in the...
I don't think there will be a standard broadband network because that would mean companies cooperating with themselves, with each other, and companies don't cooperate with each other. They just simply don't. So we're going to get a patchwork of broadband networks of different speeds. We already have that. You know, we have a broadband network in Korea that's 10 times faster than anywhere else in the world. We have different competing broadband networks here in Canada. And technology that works on one doesn't necessarily work on another. And, you know, it's really interesting. When I was at an IEEE conference in Las Vegas, of all places, I saw a presentation from a company called Aximet, or Acumet, I can never pronounce it. It's a horribly named. Anyhow, what they do is... they basically act as a broker for content. So if some organization has content that they want to distribute on the internet, what they do is they give it to this company, and this company hosts it for them. So you have images. You don't host the image on your website. You host it on their website, and you just redirect your URLs to their website. Well, that sounds all fine and good, but now what these guys have turned around and done is said to internet service providers, we want to set up one of our computers inside your network so that we can serve our content that our customers provide to us to your users. And we're not going to pay anything for the bandwidth or for the computer or for the electricity. And the ISPs do it because it's so much cheaper than bringing in the content from the original source. So now we've got the system set up where content providers, can contract with a company like Aximet, or however you pronounce that, and get these special servers inside ISP intranets, and it's not just ISPs, but also government offices, corporate offices, universities. They're all providing these internal access to content like images, applications, and the like. So, you know, even when we talk about broadband, it's already a very confusing thing. There's the pipe from us to the provider. There's the pipe from the provider to the source, and there's all kinds of these things that are happening in between. These special deals that are being made. These free services that content providers are hosting inside intranets. So all of that is at play, working against anything like global standards and broadband. It's all about special deals and preferred content.
Stephen, it looks like that's the end of the questions for now. So once again, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us.
Well, it was my pleasure, and there was one question about good old-fashioned books, and I think good old-fashioned books will go out of fashion along with good old-fashioned readers. You know, I think people in time will consume a different kind of content because they can. So thanks a lot, everyone. I appreciate you all taking the time out of your morning or your evening, or for some of you, your late night. I appreciate that, and I hope it was worth it. And I certainly enjoyed being able to talk to you.
Thank you again, Stephen.
Bye, everyone.